didn't record this. The reactivity around neutral feelings is that we are we're tending to ignore them. We're tending to just tune out. So So in meditation, we are experiencing feelings. We're experiencing feelings in the body, so sensations and associated pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral feelings. The breath, the reason why the breath is such a great object of meditation, or one of the many reasons why it's a great object of meditation, is that it is, for most people, pretty neutral. So it's, we can rest in it and not react around it. We bring our attention to it, so we're not ignoring it. We're actually cultivating a very precise attention around the breath. Any questions? Yeah.
I missed that, Daryl. The reason the breath is so important
is it is neutral. Mm-hmm. It's neutral. It's so it's not like in itself. Like we can, because we focus on the breath and we enter into it, the mind collects and calms and becomes more at ease. So then we begin to experience what are called spiritually pleasant experiences. But in itself, the breath is, it's not particularly pleasant or unpleasant. And so it doesn't grab us, we don't react to the breath by kind of grasping it or resisting it. Any other questions? Yeah.
Can you explain a little bit more about the wedge of mindfulness and how, while you're meditating, you can kind of place that wedge between them?
Right. So, I'll give an example of one of the early times when I noticed how the mind was clinging to a pleasant experience. I was on a retreat, and I was, it was actually the first day of the retreat, and I was watching the sunset, and it was just a beautiful little kind of piece of country road with a birch tree in the autumn, and the colors were beautiful, and the sky was turning different kinds of crimson and orange, and streaked with blue, and it, I found it just really beautiful, and I was just watching it change. And then I began to feel that it wasn't just enjoyment, because there was clinging. I was trying to hold on to a sunset, and somehow there was a grasping around that experience, which is so ephemeral in its very nature, and so I began to. I saw it very clearly. Okay, there's suffering here. So there's suffering. So learning to just recognize, okay, this is pleasant. And then is the mind starting to cling? And bringing mindfulness to clinging because mindfulness in its, you know, in nature, in what it is not clinging. Mindfulness, by definition, is simply being aware of moment by moment experience unfolding without clinging, without resisting, without judging, without trying to change or fix something. So when we train our minds in mindfulness, we can just simply be with experience as it is, as it's changing, and not kind of be wanting more, or not wanting to being with unpleasant experience too, and saying, you know, just, okay, this is not pleasant, and this is what it is. You know, when, you know, we're eating ice cream, you know, and so take a spoon of ice cream, you know, cold, pleasant, taste, so on, and just seeing it for what it is, being present for what it is, and then enjoying pleasant without, you know, kind of grasping, I need more. And actually, when we're grasping around a pleasant experience, we're not enjoying it. You know, in the moment that we're grasping it, we're not enjoying it. It's because it's the mind is filled with clinging and holding, and we're not just relaxed. You know, by definition, clinging and craving are, you know, we're tightening around something, we're contracting around it. We're not relaxed. We're not open to it. We're not really present to the experience as it unfolds. And again, that sensory experience. So thoughts come up sometimes, like a thought of, you know, okay, I have to do something. I have to, you know, I have a task. I have a responsibility, something I need to complete. And there might be a resistance, like maybe there's some uncertainty around how to do it. So a perception, a feeling. So we don't like the feeling of uncertainty. Like, I have this thing I need to write, and I'm not certain about how I'm going to approach it. I feel a little incompetent around, you know, as I approach writing this whatever it is, this talk, this report. So I don't like that feeling of, you know, not knowing what I'm doing or feeling a little unskilled, and so I avoid it. I keep putting it off, you know. So that's, you know, there's an unpleasant feeling of confusion, uncertainty, I mean, my experience is anytime I sit down to write anything, there's resistance. Like, I've got to kind of move through that. And it's unpleasant. So, recognizing it's an unpleasant feeling and not getting caught in it, not believing with it and making it somehow solid and an insurmountable block to, you know, getting started on, you know, the most important thing is to get started on writing something. That's I'm telling myself that as I so yeah. we have to recognize pleasant and unpleasant, especially in neutral, and we become more aware of it as the mind settles. So as the mind becomes quiet, you know, when we're in our busy lives, you know, pleasant, unpleasant, neutral, just but as the mind settles, we can, I mean, it's still a flow of pleasant, unpleasant, neutral feelings. But we can tune in a bit more. Our attention becomes more refined and more subtle, and especially for our thoughts, our mental states, our you know, the feelings that are arising in association with them. So, you know, they're always churning in the mind, but they're more, they become more conscious. And when we don't see them, we don't realize that we're being driven by them, right? When we don't, not, I mean, when I use the word see, what I mean is know. When we don't know them, when we don't recognize them, we don't realize that we're being driven by them. And I did an intensive study and practice of the Four Foundations of Mindfulness quite a few years ago, and then I began to teach it. But you know, I began to recognize how, you know, these feelings, this flow of, you know, studying the mindfulness of feelings, how, yeah, we're driven, like, you know, so I feel an unpleasant sensation in my knee in meditation, and so I move my posture. I'm trying to find a pleasant, comfortable, easy way to be. I feel a sensation of hunger, and you know, I get up and, you know, oh, time for lunch. You know, so just, you know, recognizing the flow of pleasant, unpleasant. Like, do I really want to break what I'm doing right now? Is that really what I want to do? And go make lunch, or can I just let that subtly unpleasant sensation of hunger be there, and kind of continue doing what I'm doing? Larry Rosenberg, in his book Breath by Breath, tells a story about when he was meditating at the Insight Meditation Society, and he was. It was a kind of a breakthrough meditation for him. You know, he was just really reached this deep, stable place of presence, and you know, it was quite lovely, and there was a lot of enjoyment, and then he heard the lunch bell ring. And he heard the lunch bell ring. And then, you know, before he knew it, he didn't even think about it. He was breaking his posture and getting up, and then he, yeah, look at that. Look at the mind. Look at what I did. So, you know, we're conditioned, and we react. So that's seeing the reactive mind. And it's really important also, you know, like, Larry, the way he talked about it, and he's very lighthearted and this beautiful teacher, and you know, he laughed at himself, right? You know, he had a sense of humor about it. Like, so it's really important that around these, when we see how the mind is reacting, you know, that we not judge ourselves, that we not say, oh, grasping mind, that's so terrible. it's human. I mean, it's where we're evolved in a way. I mean, there's a lot of there's some reflection and discussion now about, you know, evolution and Buddhist practice. There's a particular one author, an evolutionary psychologist named Robert Wright, who has written some interesting things. You know, we're evolved to grasp. We're evolved to, you know, to take what's good and try to more, and even more than we need, because in our early evolution, there was so much uncertainty. You know, we didn't know, you know, if we don't take that banana off the tree or that fruit, we don't know when the next one will come along. So let's take more and more and more. But we don't live in those times. In a way, what these teachings are helping us to do is to transcend how we're programmed, because we're not programmed. His point is, we're not programmed for happiness and peace and contentment in the sense that the Buddha talks about it, not just sensory pleasure. But we're not programmed for happiness and contentment. We're programmed for the survival of the species. And so our own kind of inner awareness and peace and development, spiritual development, is not on the evolutionary agenda. So it's... In a way, the Buddha talked about this process as going against the stream. Going against the stream is going against, you know, what maybe we're programmed to do, and also what our society programs us to do. You know, whereas our society is a consumer society, and we're always getting these messages. More and more and more, you know, you're going to be happy if your hair, you know, is just so perfect, and plastic hair kind of shimmering. You know, you're going to feel so good about yourself, or you're going to feel so safe, you know, in this great big car. Truck, you know, or you're going to feel so powerful, you'll feel good. So all of these messages that we get about happiness and unhappiness, you know, so it's going against the stream, not only in terms of our own programming, but in terms of a lot of our society's programming and messaging. And, you know, a lot of the religious traditions that were part of societies, as imperfect as they were, and very, very imperfect, and also some of them really institutionalized a lot of harm, but there were some messages which were, you know, less self-indulgent. And less a sense of, you know, this whole sense of separation of, you know, I have to me first and all of that. So we have to find ways, I think, to bring wisdom more to articulate the messages of wisdom and kindness and and self-restraint and, you know, moderation, all these good things in our world. So I'm digressing. But, yeah, but, you know, so begins here. Begins here by just noticing the reactive mind and coming back to the breath and being present with what experiences are arising. And not going into and seeing when reactivity is coming and coming back from that and retraining the mind. So so just instructions about how to practice with this. So we rest in the breath, and then so the attention is drawn away by thoughts, by images, by memories, by thinking about past and future. And so initially the collecting the mind around the breath just kind of begins to calm all the chatter and the restless energy of the mind. And it's a process. It really doesn't happen overnight. It's a development of the mind. So it's like any development, it takes time. There are deeper patterns that we begin to discover as the mind becomes more quiet. You know, I talked about some of these habit patterns yesterday in terms of, you know, like jealousy or you know, grasping or around certain kinds of experiences or resisting certain kinds of experiences or people or and these play out in our minds when we are sitting in meditation. So when we see that our attention is drawn away, and so we can, keeping a kind of connection with the breath, so letting the breath be that tether to the present moment, so that we're not kind of drawn into the whole story of, you know, this reactivity, but just turning toward the experience of it and seeing it unfold, feeling it unfold in the body, so or sensing it unfold in the body, and observing it, witnessing it unfold in the mind, we recognize the impermanent nature of these, because, you know, we get so identified with these stories, we get so identified with these reactive patterns. You know, we think I need this. We think I am this. We think that I can't, you know, I can't experience this because it's too, you know, it's too dangerous for me. We get very identified with these, and so again, with kindness and compassion, you know, we can begin to see how this is not who we are. These patterns are simply conditioned reactive patterns, and as we kind of don't let them hook us, we don't identify with them, we don't begin to, you know, we don't hold on to the story that we tell ourselves about them, but we just give that space of witnessing, breathing with them, we directly experience their impermanent nature, because when we don't hold them, they do move through us. You know, one of my favorite analogies is it's, you know, like if you're on the prairies, if you've ever been on the prairies, or any flat area, you know, you can see a storm coming in from a great distance. you can, you know, you can watch it, and then, you know, so, and then here it is, you're in the middle of it, you know, it's pouring rain and dark, and then it begins to pass, and the rain becomes lighter, and there's a little more light, and then it's gone. And so we can experience our emotional states like that. Just, you know, it's not going to, we don't need to do anything. Just let it be. Be the space. Be that wide open space. And let it pass through. A prairie storm can be, you know, kind of fun and beautiful to be in. But, you know, a mind storm is not usually that much fun. It is suffering. Somebody used the expression in one of the groups yesterday, there's the suffering which brings more suffering, which is the grasping, and then there's the suffering which brings an end to suffering, which is the being with our experiences as they are and just allowing them to move through us. And it brings an end to suffering because it changes our whole relationship to those states, those inner states. It changes our relationship because we deeply see into their nature. We see that they're impermanent. We see that, yeah, they are suffering. We don't want to cling to them. We don't want to identify with them. We can be free. And they're not truly who we are. They're not our essential being. You know, who we are, perhaps, could be more identified with, although identification is never, you know, the best thing, but we can say we are the space. If we're anything, we are the space which knows. It's like an openness which also knows the passing through of these experiences. So we don't need to do anything. We don't need to be the meditator who is doing this. We simply need to be open and to surrender to the experience of being present with what is. And that sense of needing to do something, needing to fix it, needing to, you know, be the agent, you know, can just dissipate. Mm-hmm. And trust the capacity of mindfulness, trust the capacity of awareness to liberate what it comes in contact with, what is passing through us.
Could I ask you to just repeat that again? Trust being with awareness, trust being with your own presence, whatever is in your
Yeah, trust being trust with presence.
Without doing anything.
Right. It does take a commitment to not go into the story. It does take it. So that's why what we did, the kind of practice that we did on Thursday to establish stability of mind, to establish a steadiness of attention, is so key, because it does take a steadiness of attention to be with changing experience and not get caught up in it. So, and that's why Buddhadasa says, you know, two steps, to this process. The first step is establish the stability of attention. The second step is to see the impermanence of everything from that space of stability, because otherwise the mind gets lost in wanting and in resisting and in not liking and wanting to change things, wanting to fix everything. So, yeah.
Could you remind us the verses from the Anapanasati Sutta that were relevant to the Vedana?
To the Vedana, okay. Yeah. So, there are four, and they are one trains oneself. I will breathe in experiencing joy. I will breathe out experiencing joy. So that was, it's very shorthand, right? So the joy, which is a spiritual feeling, comes out of the calming of the body, calming of the contractions and the restlessness in the body. So, so it's a settling and relaxing of the body, and then joy begins to come out of it.
Do you know the Pali word that joy maps to there?
Pitti.
Pitti, okay.
So pitti, and it's sometimes described as rapture. And rapture can actually be a rather intense experience, because it can be just a kind of a sense of vibration, but it can also be really powerful. And, you know, I've been on long retreat and it's like the mind is saying, it's, you know, like, enough already. You know, like all of this kind of energy coming out. So it feels, there's a kind of pleasantness, but it can also begin to feel a little unpleasant.
What's the first jhana?
Pitti, actually, yes, it is the first jhana. Pitti, sukha. I'm not too clear on the teachings on jhana, what the different ones are. So the second of is one trains oneself. I will breathe in experiencing pleasure. I will breathe out experiencing pleasure. So the joy becomes a more subtle experience of pleasure. One trains oneself. I will breathe in experiencing mental formation. I will breathe out experiencing mental formation. So so mental formation is, in this context, and again, you know, I guess it's a translation of Vedana, because, you know, all the scholars say that this second one is on feelings. So just experiencing mental formations, it's not pleasant or unpleasant. And then one trains oneself, I will breathe in calming mental formation. I will breathe out calming mental formation. So calming in a way is not grasping, letting go. So yeah. So there's, you know, as I mentioned, this is pretty bare bones, you know, the teaching, and so it's kind of digging in and practicing with it and reading, you know, what other teachers and scholars have said about it. But so that wedge of mindfulness, you know, is, I would say, would be experiencing and calming mental formations. And the joy and the pleasure help give us a base not to grasp after pleasant feelings and, you know, push away unpleasant feelings. So, okay. So let's sit for a few minutes, just a short sitting.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.